Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. It is episode 2 of the Bullshito Podcast featuring your lovely co-host. With me, I have Sam, and then obviously Hello. You got me, you know, Seth, you know.
Yes.
Well, you know, the same Johns as last time. Hello, hello. We are removed from a very, very, very fun UFC 280, but an even better Jake Paul versus Anderson Silva card. I mean, what an amazing card that was, Sam, right?
Amazing is one word to describe it, certainly. I watched the whole thing and I regret every single minute that I spent doing so. I watched the whole main card from the Dr. Mike fight onward.
Pain. Dude, I forgot Dr. Mike fight. Did you know that Dr. Mike actually fought? He lost, but before that, do you know who he fought?
I believe Ego Raptor, aka Aaron from Game Grumps.
iDubbbz.
It was iDubbbz?
He fought iDubbbz. Epic Mealtime is the one that fought Ego Raptor.
Okay. See, I didn't watch Creator Clash. I'm just a Sam Hyde mark, so I only watched
dude,
that
same
highlight.
Here. Same, yeah. I love Sam Hyde, dude. I'm so happy for him. I'm so happy for Sam Hyde. Like, Sam, if you ever watch this, congratulations. I fucking love you, dude. What
Jake
you do
Paul,
is amazing.
Jake Paul versus Anderson Silva, I sleep. Sam Hyde versus Hasanabe, I awake.
Oh, dude, that fight needs to happen. It needs to happen. The Candyman needs to happen.
We're spending time, what's it called? Vamping over YouTuber fights because we don't want to talk about how wrong we were on UFC 280.
Yeah. So this is all just a cover up. We're not going to talk about UFC 280 at all. How bad our picks were or anything like that. We're just talking about, we want Sam Hyde to fight Hasanabe.
I think we were 2 for 6. Like we picked Chukagi and Fiora to go to the scorecards.
Yes.
And we picked Aljo, but our rationale for picking Aljo was entirely nullified by the fact that TJ Dillashaw's shoulder just decided to stop working.
Right. I thought it was going to be domination anyway, personally, but
yeah, but we were only correct on the obvious boring women's fight being boring. We didn't even pick a winner there, I don't think. I think we might have picked Chukagian.
Yeah, we said Chukagian next fight.
Terrible.
That's what we did.
Oh.
The inaugural women's fight, women's really bad fight on a very good MMA card, main card.
Terrible.
Because of quality.
But we completely, we were totally wrong about Islam. We were totally wrong about Dariush. We were totally wrong about Sean Brady. Oh, my God.
Yep.
But him and Bilal just stood in the pocket across from each other and threw 1-2s, and Bilal was better at it.
That was not the fight that Sean Brady wanted to fight against Bilal Muhammad.
No.
The thing about being an experienced wrestler is that eventually you get good at striking because of how long you've been in the UFC. Sean Brady hasn't been in the UFC that long. So when you default to your striking abilities and you're less experienced and you haven't fought the Leon Edwards of the world and your opponent has, there's going to be a little bit of a, shall we say, adversity that you're going to face. And if you're not ready for it, then you're not ready for it. And you're going to get out of there. I mean, plus he was an undefeated fighter, so the mindset going into a fight is just completely, in my mind, it's completely different going into a fight when you're undefeated. He's saying that he was like, oh, he was like so relieved that he got beat, man. Like, I can see that, but I also think that that's kind of a cop out. However, I'm not a pro athlete, so me saying that, it's like, who the hell is this white kid online that has 5 listeners? Who's he to talk about Sean Brady and what he's doing? But in my opinion, I've seen it in pro boxers in my gym. And when that O goes, something goes in there. So I don't know, maybe that strikes Sean Brady to get some striking ability and go to the toolbox, and he comes back better than ever. We've seen it before, for sure. There's been other fighters that lost their O and came back better.
Yeah. But
yeah. Unfortunate for Philly. We can only have so much happiness, Sam. The Phillies, the Eagles, the
Sixers,
Union.
Sixers back to .500. Flyers are 5-2-1 right now.
Right. We can only have so much happiness.
We can only have every sports team being good. We have to sacrifice Sean Brady losing and Boots Ennis not getting a fight. Those are the two sacrifices we have to make.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. Well,
but on that point, real quick, I think there might be a difference between boxers losing their O, where that's like being undefeated is such a marketing sell for boxers where, like, I don't know, 80% of the time, if you're a hype prospect and then you lose, you're not going to come back as a superstar versus right. MMA. Which where
that's bullshit, by the way, but yeah.
Yeah, it's idiotic. But MMA, being undefeated isn't actually the biggest draw. Like, Charles Oliveira's lost, what, like 14 fights or whatever, and he's one of the biggest draws in the sport.
Yeah.
You know, the Usman-Leon fight is going to be huge because of the loss on Usman's side.
Yes, absolutely.
So I think for Sean Brady now, the pressure is off in terms of maintaining the undefeated prospect, all the hype and everything. But there's not new pressure now where there would be for a boxer like a Terrence Crawford, where half of his appeal is, oh my God, he's never lost. He's the best to ever be in this division. You know, like yeah. Sean Brady doesn't have to deal with that because he still has the UFC contract. There's still matchups for him. He's still ranked. He's still going to get more fights. Whereas right. I feel like a lot of undefeated boxers, like, people would immediately stop watching Inoue if he lost one of his fights, you know?
Yeah, they're
just like, oh, the hype is gone.
Yeah. I mean, just look at what happened with Loma.
Yeah, no one cared. More people watched Jake Paul Anderson Silva than the literally. Fucking Loma fight. Another literally. Loma masterpiece, by the way, my Ukrainian brother.
Not only did he win, he beat somebody in the guy who just lost to, was it Lopez? No, Teofimo Lopez.
Yeah.
He went up to that division and won. And he still had problems. You saw the relatively unknown Malias. What was that guy's name again? Yeah, I think I got his name somewhat right. But you saw him bring some of the same problems that Tio brought to the table, and how Loma dealt with it a second time around.
Love it.
So that's good. Good on Loma. Like, I would love to see more of the notion, like the MMA mindset in boxing, just because you would see so much more fights and people would take more of a risk. Like AJ, like use AJ, for example, he lost. So he has no choice other than to call out these big names, right? Yep. It wasn't until he lost to somebody he wasn't supposed to lose to that he got into that position. And that's the only time you see fighters like that face the big names in boxing, is if they lose randomly or just eventually somebody's out of their prime and it's okay, now it's time to fight that guy. I mean,
well, and you think about it, in the best eras and best divisions of boxing, like historically, heavyweight has been one of the best divisions. It's absolutely. Because guys fight each other and knock each other the hell out, and there's no way to predict what's going to happen, and then they come back. Like, people are still watching Deontay Wilder fight after the trilogy with Fury because that was even more of a boost to him. Like, he came out of that trilogy a better fighter than he was before he started it, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I agree.
And you know,
he looks better technically, not only like experience, exactly. He looks better technically after this.
Yeah. Yeah. And you start going back to those losses and comparing the Hellenius knockout where he hits him with this short, I think it was a short left or a short right, whatever it was. And I see that mirrored with the same shots he hit Fury with. And that increases Fury's appeal. And it also increases Wilder's appeal. Cause look at this power. Only one man could survive it and all this stuff. And then the boxing marketing, the other 90% just ignores all of that completely. And it's like, nah, they have to be undefeated or else they stink.
Right.
It's like, what? Learn from the money-making division. Anyway,
you can even learn from Eddie Hearn.
Yeah.
Eddie Hearn's a great promoter. He's probably the only
selling
good
boxer. Selling the hell out of AJ right now. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. All right. So let's go over UFC 280 in the top three matches that we really, really wanted to see here. That being, I'll start from the top down for controversial reasons. We'll start with Islam beating Charles Oliveira to gain the lightweight championship of the world. I'm not surprised. All right.
No.
I know we picked Charles Oliveira. I'm really not surprised that this happened. I've been saying all week this was our riskiest pick, and I was betting with my gut, with my heart, not my mind. You know, we fell for it. You know, if you think about it, we did as soon as we picked Charles Oliveira, it's like, oh, now you're doubting Islam. Now Islam's going to go take the title. That's just how MMA works, man. Like, it's so crazy. But I'm not shocked because it's Islam Makhachev, dude. And it was on his home turf. Khabib was in the corner, you know. A beautiful moment, first of all. A beautiful moment for Khabib, for Abdulmanap. God rest his soul. Allah rest his soul. Like, just a beautiful, beautiful moment for them, honestly.
Inshallah, Islam finally brought the belt back to Dagestan.
Yeah.
No, I agree. And I also think that this is the, you know, on a card full of fluky, weird situations, controversial decisions, strange sleeper fights, this was both action-packed, technical, and the right guy won. And it's the question that we had ahead of time.
I see what you did there.
The question we'll get there. The question that a lot of people raised before this fight was, Makhachev, you know, his best wins are Thiago Moises, Drew Dober, and wrestle fucking Dan Hooker. How does he do against someone elite? And Islam shut up all of those questions with this performance. I was reading some breakdowns about the trips he was using against the cage, where he would knee. He knew that Oliveira would be thinking about the trips from the get-go. So he would get Oliveira in the clinch against the cage. He would knee him in the body, and Oliveira would do nothing. And then he would knee him in the body again, and Oliveira would be like, oh, we're trading knees, and would knee him in the body. And right when Oliveira was returning his foot to the mat, Islam would hit a nice inside judo trip. And stuff like that, where he's just outclassing and out-techniquing the people at the top of the game.
Yeah.
And this could turn into a bigger discussion, maybe for another podcast, but the Khabib camp seems set up for a serious dynasty of greatness. Mm-hmm. Khabib might be a better coach than a fighter, because he still is in athletic shape and he loves training people. And I think his training is just going balls to the wall in the cage in sparring rounds. Mm-hmm. And Islam has had to deal with Khabib pressure for
five minute
rounds, you know?
Like, so, who do you think Khabib was training with to get ready for fights?
Exactly.
It wasn't Daniel Cormier. It was Islam. Like, he's not wrestling with Daniel Cormier to get ready for fucking Conor McGregor. No.
No.
He's fighting Islam, because not only is Islam a great grappler, he's a good striker.
He's pretty good.
He's a pretty good striker.
He's simple. Like, he really just had the left straight and the right hook all fight, but he was setting them up in interesting ways. He was effectively counter-striking one of the better counter-strikers in the division.
The kicks look good too.
Kicks looked really good.
Right.
The kicks were deployed in a safe enough way to where Oliveira probably couldn't hit anything meaningful off of it in terms of grappling offense.
Right. It was all really...
It was such a nice game plan. It was such a well thought out game plan. It was so well executed. Islam had obviously spent so much time looking at Charles's habits, and, you know, the finish was pretty, the knockdown into the squeeze.
Yep. Into the arm triangle.
I've heard something really upsetting to me, honestly, that this is Oliveira quitting again, and that he tapped too early. When the choke is in, and especially when you're like head and arm triangle, when you're flat against the mat, like your shoulders are to the mat, you're pinned, he's in mount, you're not really getting out of that if the other guy is also an effective grappler. Like, even if you're a black belt, if you're totally locked to the mat and he's just putting the squeeze on you, you can tap after about 3 seconds of the squeeze. You don't have to go to sleep there. Like, the choke is not coming out. And people are saying, oh, Charles just went back to his quitting ways, just tapped way too early, could have gotten out of it. You're not getting out of the Islam Makhachev stranglehold. And I don't know what Charles has to do to prove that he tried his best in that fight. His best just wasn't good enough tonight. It was sad for me as an Oliveira fan. I'm excited for everything lightweight is going to bring. You know, the best wrestler at lightweight losing definitively definitely puts a little bit of a fear of Allah, one shall say, in my heart. But Islam Volk will be fun, at least, before Islam has to wrestle fuck all the same guys that Khabib and Oliveira did again.
Yeah. So that was going to be my next question, is how do you say the fight isn't made yet. So we'll not, we won't get into a full breakdown. How do you see that fight going? And how interested are you in that fight?
I'm super interested in that fight because I'm bored of Volk outclassing featherweights. And I also like Volk Arnold Allen is not spicy enough for me to get super invested. We can talk about the Arnold Allen thing in a second. Volk Josh Emmett is the fight I think I least want made in UFC history.
Not just you.
I would despise that fight.
So would everybody else.
And I don't see this fight falling apart like a lot of other ones do. Like the other fights where it's been this level of animosity and like Volk coming and getting in the cage after the main event. Like the only other time we've seen that and it hasn't come to pass would be what, DC Brock. And that's like Brock was retired. Brock wasn't a reigning defending UFC champion pound for pound number one.
They didn't even fight.
Exactly. So that's the only time it's ever happened. And that Brock was retired from MMA.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Did you know that the Brock Lesnar thing was staged?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they knew, like, they discussed backstage, like, Brock told them, like, yo, we're going to sell the fight. And DC's like, hell yeah.
I'm sure this was too. Like, I'm sure Volk, because Volk was doing fucking Hasbulla promos for the UFC YouTube channel. You know, Volk literally flew to Abu Dhabi to go on vacation and cut promos for the UFC. He's the UFC's like favorite title contender or title holder right now in terms of he'll do anything for a fun promo. He's always game for whatever fights they want to make. He'll fill in on pay-per-views. He'll just fight in Vegas or California or whatever. He's like, oh, let's do Australia for my seventh title defense or whatever it is at this point. You know, like he doesn't care at all. He's just there to have fun and win fights. And I don't think Islam cares either. Islam is like, yeah, put this tiny guy in front of me. I don't care. But, yeah, I'm interested to see how it plays out. I am slightly scared for Volk because in the cage, the biggest issue that Volk has had over his career, the two spots where he's been in the most trouble were Brian Ortega grappling him and Chad Mendez wrestling him. And Islam is as good of a grappler, if not more disciplined and way more better. Offensively skilled than Brian Ortega. And he will
definitely
be
better than Chad Mendez.
He will be 20 pounds heavier than Chad Mendez was in that fight.
Right.
That, like, Chad Mendez is a really good wrestler in his own right, but Islam will be 20 pounds heavier in the cage than featherweight Chad Mendez.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, scary.
Yeah. The thing about this is, I think you were right when you said last week that Charles Oliveira was a better matchup for Volk than Islam, and I disagreed. The more I think about it now, you're totally right. Islam is a terrible matchup for Volk. Especially being that's your first fucking lightweight fight. Good luck.
Yeah.
Not only are you fighting Islam, you're fighting a very bad matchup for you. I mean, not that Alexander Volkanovsky doesn't have amazing takedown defense and amazing striking.
Right.
But you're right. The spots where he's had to deal with adversity are the guillotine.
Yep.
Which there's actually another moment in that fight when he was fighting off a rear naked. The triangle.
Yeah.
The triangle when he was fighting off the triangle too.
Yep.
So he got caught in two very slick submissions. Now, the difference between Ortega and Islam is that Ortega did it off his back.
Yeah.
We haven't seen
the triangle,
Alexander.
The triangle was off his back. The guillotine was, I believe, he jumped guillotine. People call it a takedown or a knockdown, but I think he leg kicked him and Volk lost his balance and he jumped guillotine on him.
Right. But yeah. I think he pulled guard with the guillotine and then flipped him over.
That's what I mean with jumped guillotine. Yeah. So it wasn't from his back. He intentionally went from the feet.
He intentionally pulled guard.
Yeah.
Right. But maybe, I don't know, maybe Alexander Volkanovsky off of his back, he's way better at defending those submissions, getting up off the ground.
We won't know.
Because he is, though. We have seen it, not against Islam. You're right. We're not going to know until we see that fight. But the spots where Alexander Volkanovsky pops out is when he's off his back.
Yeah.
He might be more comfortable there. I don't know. It might be easier for him to hip escape, get up, use the fence to get up, because he's a smaller dude. He's got a lower center of gravity as well. And those dudes are just hard. They're hard to. I mean, just look at Friere. Look at Patricio.
Yeah,
that dude's fucking everybody up, and he's like 5'4" in the featherweight division.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see too. Because if I'm Volkanovski, right, what I would probably do is we all mock John Jones for, oh, you're just going to bulk to heavyweight and not have like a tune-up fight. You're just going to fight for the belt. And we're like the MMA media in the same breath is pro Volk Islam. But if I'm Volk, I'm taking like 6 months to bulk, which he might already be doing, right? He made 155 for this alternate whatever situation.
Right.
So he might already be in that bulk anticipating this opportunity, but maybe fight like Dariush, someone that you should be easily able to beat and has proven themselves as a top contender. Mm-hmm. You fight Dariush, and then if Dariush is easy, then you risk it all against Islam. But I guess for something like this, you don't want to risk the biscuit on Dariush, you know? So,
well, not only that, but if he wasn't a title holder, it'd be a different story because mm-hmm. you're holding up another division. You're not going to yeah. hold up a division just to go fight a Dariush or anybody other than the champion. Yeah. But it does work. But think about this. So he needs time to bulk up, right? He already kind of had that time because the last time he fought was, I believe,
Korean Zombie in March,
which was in March.
I want to say
it
March.
It is now November.
Yeah. So if he was properly bulking, even in the last couple months, I think they're targeting this for the 284 in February. So that would be four.
And he has another 4 months.
Yeah. And then
he might have already, dude, this fight might have been. Like, Volk might have been in that slate for much longer than we thought.
What you're saying about it being staged and, like, they've been planning the Australia event for a while. We're just now getting all the Brazil fights announced for 283. I imagine they've had all of their Australia guys tagged for this event. You know, Rob Whittaker already has a fight. I'm sure Dan Hooker will have another fight if he wins next 2 weeks, you know?
Yeah.
All the,
and if Izzy wins, maybe he has a quick turnaround.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if Izzy beats Pajeda, he'll beat Sean Strickland or Jared Cannonier again or whoever in 3 months. Rest,
come out as the Undertaker and put everybody to sleep.
Crying. Yeah. But yeah.
Favorite fighter, though. Shout out Izzy. I love Izzy.
I think that Volk Islam is the fight to make simply because I'm so bored with good grapplers beating the same exciting strikers that get into wars with each other. Like I'm really bored with the X guy chokes out Justin Gaethje fight or X guy chokes out Dustin Poirier fight. We don't need to see it for a third time. Those guys have not developed wrinkles now with their fights in between that are going to suddenly make them better matchups against the Islams and Khabibs and Charleses of the world. So at least Volk is something more well-rounded and interesting and proven where he makes advancements every single fight. So
I agree with that because not only that, for the reason that you just said, you got to have the contenders come up and fight the Justin Gaethjes and Dustin Poiriers of the world too.
Right. Like I would much rather see Fazeev Gaethje or the winner of Poirier Chandler fight. I don't know, like a Jalen Turner or a Sarukian or something like that. You know, Sarukian is fighting Ismagulov. So you do the winner of that versus the loser of Poirier Chandler, something like that, where those guys become tests for the next generation. Cause the 10 to 20 of lightweight is so stacked right now.
Yeah.
And they're all just fighting each other. They're all self-cannibalizing with Gaethje and Poirier and Chandler holding their spots on the top.
And who's the clear-cut number one contender right now?
I mean, it's hard to say. I would probably say...
Exactly. It's hard to say. You can't come up with one to go fight Islam Makhachev. That's
Dariush,
the point. Volk is a perfect pick.
Yeah, the one who's earned it the most is Dariush, but Dariush is sleeping.
I think he needs one more fight, personally.
Yeah, we say that about Dariush every fight. Like Dariush, people were talking about, oh, he'll be a title contender after beating Tony Ferguson.
I haven't said that about Dariush. Yeah. I've not said that about Dariush. I've never said he needed one more fight. This is what he needs to fight: Justin Gaethje or Dustin Poirier.
Give him the winner of Poirier Chandler, and then if he beats them, then I'm sold. Even if his mic skills are atrocious, and let's actually use this opportunity though to segue into another clear cut, the second most clear cut and most impressive win on the card. Dariush just outclassing Gamrot at every stage. What'd you think of that?
Well, I missed the fight, so I had to check highlights.
You haven't gone back and watched? I recommend it. It was actually
I watched highlights of the fight. Like I wasn't able to sit there and watch the full fight. I watched round one, and then then something came up, and then I had to like dip or something like that. Like I forget what I was doing. I think I was doing some homework or whatever, but
sure.
So I wasn't able to catch that full fight. So you'll probably be a better breaker.
Sure.
He did get hit with a monster left hand, dude.
Big left hand. Yeah. But the thing is, that was the stamp on an already pretty sealed fight. Like Gamrot, round one was close. I gave it to Gamrot because I'm a fan, but every takedown Gamrot hit and every chain wrestling move he did, Dariush was one step ahead of him and scrambling out of it already. And I was spooked by that. And then he's kept hitting these nasty knees to the body in the second and third round every time Gamrot shot. It was such a perfect, well-executed game plan in a similar way where I really think Dariush has stepped it up. Gamrot was a sort of scary guy in the division, talked about as in a future title contender, a future title holder. And Dariush made him look too inexperienced and too young. You know, KSW champ beat Tsarukyan in a close fight. Has outclassed pretty much everyone else in the division except Kitata Ladze. And yeah, Dariush just easily, handily won that fight.
Yeah, I mean, I think he definitely took advantage of the inexperience of Gamrot, especially in the grapplings and scrambling situations.
Yeah, like how many guys.
And not only that, Dariush has got some heavy hands. Like he's got some crisp, heavy hands.
Absolutely.
And people sleep on that, but there's been some fights. That you can even go back and watch.
The Drakkar close fight.
And you can see like how good Dariush really is. Like he's not like, yeah, he's definitely not the guy that got kneed to the shadow realm by Edson Barboza anymore.
I was playing it on slow-mo in my head. That's the nastiest knee.
The nastiest knockout I've ever seen was that.
I think it's worse than, because people, you know, flying knee knockout, you're like, oh, the Jorge Masvidal. No. Barboza, but like, Masvidal had to jump halfway across the ring to hit Askren with that amount of force. Barboza just hopped up. There was no forward movement at all. He just stepped into the knee and delivered the hardest knee I've ever seen in my life.
That knee is like one of the best knockouts I've ever seen. Shout out Edson Barboza.
Honestly, a featherweight or lightweight legend, featherweight. I hope he gets another fight soon, guy, because man, I love watching him fight.
He's fun to watch. And at featherweight, he's ripped.
Arguably, to his detriment, you know, the Giga thing, he didn't have much cushion on that body to take those body kicks, but I digress. No. I think Dariush clearly won that fight. I think Gamrot looked outclassed, and then Dariush just ruins it every time by not cutting a good promo on the microphone. Like, he won't call anyone out. I respect his religious beliefs. I think it's really important to do stuff that you stand for. If all you do is shout out Jesus Christ and the power that he's given you, and then you don't do anything to further your career in terms of making big call outs, like Michael Chandler is just as heavy a believer in Jesus Christ as you are. But Michael Chandler cuts fucking promos. Okay.
Yeah.
Conor McGregor 170. Like do some shit like that. Dariush, please give me something to get invested in you. Cause you keep going on these winning streaks. I think there's 7 in a row and I don't want to watch you fight for the belt. I don't care. I don't know. All right. Aljo TJ real quick.
Yeah. Aljo TJ domination. Absolute domination. I called it. I didn't necessarily call it, but I said it was going to be domination.
We had the right pick if you were betting money line. That's all that matters, is we were correct on who won the fight.
Mm-hmm.
Did we know that TJ was compromised before he even got in the cage? No.
That's his problem, though.
Yep.
Honestly. I want to say I feel for TJ because I do feel for TJ because I think what he said in the ring after the fight was right, because if he pulled out of this fight, when the hell is he getting another title shot?
Yeah.
You don't know. So respect to TJ for trying to get in there and get it done. What really kind of turned me off to the whole notion that he had these torn shoulders and stuff like that, he's always had these shoulder problems, was when he started talking crap about Cody Garbrandt, which, by the way, Cody Garbrandt is now pissed off at TJ again.
Make that fight.
Trying to fight TJ a third time.
Make that fight simply because I want to see Cody get knocked out the exact same way.
Yeah. Like, so I don't know if I believe TJ. Like, in the Aljo fight, yes, clearly he had some shoulder issues. But now he's saying, oh, I always dealt with this, you know, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, bro, just take your L. PT yeah. it up, PT it up, strengthen it up. Just shut the fuck up, dude. All right. Like, I love TJ. Like, the whole reason I got into MMA was watching TJ's striking style. And I'm just like, wow, this Dutch Muay Thai. And I started training myself six, seven years ago. All right. I love TJ. But, dude, you need to shut the fuck up sometimes. I mean, the same thing happened last time when he lost to Cejudo. He was saying some dumb shit. He's saying some dumb shit again. Not completely as bad as the Cejudo thing. But TJ, shut the fuck up, dude. Like, go on. Oh, I beat Cody with two torn shoulders? Yeah, okay. So you're telling me the doctors checked you out and looked at your two torn shoulders and were like, yeah, okay, you can go fight Cody Garbrandt, who just styled on Dominic Cruz. Yeah, sure, go ahead. No. Nah. Not a fucking shot, dude. Not a shot. There's not a shot. Like, come on.
I mean, I don't know, because in this fight, he says he told the refs, he said his whole camp, like, he tore it so many times. If the doctors let him out for this one, I think he said it was the second Cody fight. I imagine the doctors would let him out to defend his belt against a guy he convincingly knocked out.
That's different.
Yeah.
But not the first fight. There's no way.
Did he say it was in both fights? Because that would be surprising to me.
He said both fights.
Wow. Okay.
He said both times he knocked out Cody Garbrandt.
Yeah.
He had two torn shoulders. I get it if you tear your shoulders and then you have to go defend your title because otherwise you might get stripped.
Yeah.
And or an interim champion's there and that's a whole fucking headache.
Yep.
I get that. But
and I also motivation here where it's bantamweight in 2022. Like, the contenders are coming.
Yes, Chito Vera agree with him. Chito I think Vera he made the coming. Right call. Yeah. I think he made the right call in trying to fight. He tried his best. I don't think he was going to beat Aljo anyway, personally. No. I really don't think he was going to beat Aljo because Aljo really looks good. He really does look good.
And TJ's 38. Like, if it wasn't this health
he's
concern.
He's getting there, right.
The gas tank, you know, 38 at bantamweight is you're at the edge of what you can do athletically.
Right.
The gas tank that we've seen from TJ was not going to be as strong. The wrestling discipline and the takedown defense we've seen is not going to be as strong. Aljo would have still gotten to those dominant positions. It just would have been a round 4 TKO due to strikes on the ground versus a round 2 his shoulder popped and he can't do anything to fight back stoppage.
Right. And respect to him for being a warrior too.
Big, huge respect.
Big huge respect for him being
when he got off the stool going into round 2. We watched together. I think we were both just like, "Wow, he's really going to come out for this."
He's
like,
actually going
to
do this.
Props to him.
Props to
his team doing their best. Like, I don't know, man. After seeing a similar fight, the Aaron Pico situation where they're trying to pop his shoulder in the corner, he's like writhing in agony, barely could get up to try. Like, TJ man through it and was like, yep, I'm gonna go try to give my all for this title one more time.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Respect to TJ. And I do believe that he's been having shoulder problems all camp. Yeah. I 100% believe that. Just not in the Cody fights, but that doesn't matter. You know?
So
the Aljo fight is what just happened. I agree. I think he made the right call. I think he did the right thing. He even said sorry, which was crazy to me that he said sorry to the whole division. Sorry for holding up the whole division and stuff like
which
that.
Which is such an anti-TJ thing to do. Like, the guy wanted to close flyweight. He was like, yeah, I'll shut this stupid fucking division down. Fuck all you guys. To all these, like, really exciting fighters who just no one cared about. And then he's like, sorry, bantamweights. I'm sorry for holding up the division. Like, come on. Just be the dick TJ that we all love you for. Come on.
Right. He might just not be that dick anymore, man. Like, he just might not be that guy anymore.
I'll believe it when I see it more than one time after his shoulder dislocated. So you wanted to talk about Aljo Cejudo, right?
Aljo Cejudo, yeah. So, well, before we get into the Aljo Cejudo mix-up,
Oh God.
Or not mix up, match up, excuse me. Let's conclude our analysis of the card with what a horrible fucking decision.
No, I've
Peter actually Yan versus O'Malley. What the fuck happened, dude? What the fuck was that?
So I rewatched the fight because I was curious, and I've sent
don't
the fight.
Don't you dare!
I've
don't
no, no, no,
you
no.
dare!
No, 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 no! All right, so I'll say off the bat, I still think Piotr won. I still 100%. Think Piotr won. I don't know if it's as much of a travesty as we thought at the time, and everyone thought at the time. I think round one was really, really close, and I think round three is clearly a Sean round, and I think you can give that fight to either guy, which in and of itself is impressive. The fact that O'Malley stepped his game up and was able to compete with Piotr Jan for 15 minutes, very, very impressive to
me.
The fact that he knocked down Piotr Jan, who I think has only been knocked down by Magomed Magomedov in fucking ACA. Like, yeah. That's
one person in the UFC did knock him down. I forget who. We were to mention in this last show. I forget who it was.
I forget
but
who
he was
too.
Knocked down in the UFC.
Okay. Yeah, this was really crisp striking from Sean.
Yeah.
I don't know how judges score wrestling anymore, and that really frustrates me because Jan completely dominated any time it went to the ground. Had multiple minutes of control time across multiple rounds.
That's my problem.
It did not matter. It didn't matter.
I think that is in of itself is just horseshit. Personally,
yeah.
You were saying it's much closer than we initially thought it was. I actually rewatched the fight too.
Okay.
I am not more outraged, but I am not significantly less outraged. I'm still pretty confused by that fight personally. I'm still a little not because we lost money. Definitely not because we lost money
I had Jan money line straight up. I was so confident. He was like -525. I didn't even parlay it. I was just like Jan is winning this fight.
Bozo'd.
I'm gonna make my $1 off the $5 bet or whatever it was. I'm gonna make my
Couldn't
little profit.
Get that.
I'm so confident that Jan is gonna win. I'm just gonna make my tidy little 20% profit and everything will be okay. No,
it wasn't okay.
But aside from that, yeah, what were you saying about the wrestling?
That's the most confusing part to me is that the wrestling didn't amount to anything for the judges. Because round one and two, he wrestle fucked them for 2 minutes of control time in those rounds. And
every
was
round
with
had
him on the feet.
Like, every round Sean, had moments, yeah.
Yeah, Sean barely outstruck Jan. Barely outstruck Jan.
I think that you can only, like, you can give either guy the edge. It's just that Sean had the knockdowns.
Well, Peter Jan also had a knockdown.
Right, but 2-1, you know, you sort of are just like,
But Jan did not get knocked down. I don't think he got knocked down, did he?
Didn't he get two knocked? Because there was the one where he got cut over the eye with
that wasn't a knockdown.
That wasn't a knockdown? That wasn't counted that way?
I don't think he ever got knocked down.
I'm going to fight metric right now.
I could be not remembering right. But I don't think Jan got knocked down once.
I mean, I also could
had
too.
He gotten knocked down in the first
they're,
or second.
They're saying that neither guy got knocked down.
That's
that's inaccurate.
Well, Sean O'Malley got knocked down, in my opinion. I can see why they didn't call it a knockdown because of the way he landed on his hand and like kept himself up. So I think that's why they're saying that the Jan left overhand isn't a knockdown. But Jan did not get knocked down. From what I remember, he did not get knocked down at all. He did suffer the massive cut over the side with
big
the knee
cut,
through
the
guard.
Stumbles, everything. Like I think that you can edge O'Malley there, but clearly wrestling just doesn't have as big of an impact as it used to, and I'm not sure how I feel about that.
I think that's like the crummiest thing about that personally. It's not even that the fact that O'Malley won on the feet or whatever. I think O'Malley did outstrike Jan barely, but that's not to say Jan didn't do good on the feet. Jan did really good on the feet. And he showed O'Malley O'Malley's weaknesses on the feet, which is not something that's not something we saw with the Conor Aldo fight or anything like that.
No.
Jan pieced up O'Malley. O'Malley pieced up Jan as well. A little bit more efficiently, especially with that knee, the knee being the significant strike that I think gave him the edge, especially to draw that kind of a cut and the reaction that it did out of Jan, because Jan did not look there for a couple of seconds after that knee landed. Props to O'Malley. I don't think O'Malley did bad or anything like that. I definitely don't think he won. And it's because of the wrestling.
It's because of the wrestling.
I get the idiotic argument that I'm seeing on my feeds is that, oh, well, Jan didn't win those rounds because he took him down and didn't do anything. I'm like, no, that is why he won those rounds, is because he took him down and he did do something. He fucking took him down and held him there. Sean O'Malley's a good grappler. That's what a lot of people overlook, Sean O'Malley as a good jiu-jitsu practitioner. He's really good off of his back. He's not a wrestler. But he's actually pretty good off of his back. Holding the guy there and getting little pop shots off, that's doing something. Because he's trying to advance position. He's trying to advance to half guard and things like that. It's not it's an idiotic argument to me when people tell me, oh, he shouldn't have won those rounds because he took him down and didn't do anything. When he took him down six times. It's not like he took him down once. And fucking held him there for the whole round. No, he took him down. Sean got back up. He took him down again. Sean got back up. He took him down again. Like, that's how it went.
How do you score a fight where your opponent's best course of action is striking, and so your strategy is to take him down and nullify the striking, and that is not a positive for you, that you're controlling where the fight is taking place. You're stopping your opponent from executing their best game plan. You're using the full rule set and available techniques of mixed martial arts in order to do that. Like, that should be a positive in your favor. It's
absolutely
not, it's not good defense that doesn't get scored. It is meaningful offense and meaningful control of the fight and the position the fight is taking place in.
Absolutely. 100% agree. Nailed it on the head. I didn't even think of that point as well. Like, it's literally, that's your game plan. That's how you win that fight.
He came
to nullify the striking.
And everyone who's coming in now to fight Sean O'Malley is going to have the same game plan, especially at the top of the division. Like, Cheeto in the rematch that will eventually happen, I am positive. Lock it in. That will happen before they retire. The Cheeto O'Malley, if not multiple times, that rivalry will continue. Cheeto will try to take him down. Marab will try to take him down. Aljo will try to take him down. All of these, Cejudo will try to take him down. All of these top contenders at bantamweight will try to wrestle O'Malley. And depending on who the judges are, is that going to matter at all?
Yeah, right.
That's so frustrating for me as a fan.
So frustrating, definitely.
But
and not only that, the biggest crime of it all, Jan wants to retire now because of it.
Well, no, I think he wants to step away from the UFC. I think he wants to go to another promotion. But I
heard a retirement from MMA.
That's wild. That's super sad because he's so fun to watch, even if he is kind of flawed. Like, the slow start thing with him is really real. I don't know why he didn't throw as many leg kicks as he has in the past. But regardless, such a fun guy to watch. One of my favorite fighters to watch.
100%.
That would be really disappointing 100%. if this pushed him away from the sport. But props to O'Malley, like, held his own in the striking, was able to do enough in terms of grappling defense to convince two judges that the grappling didn't matter, which in and of itself is a positive. I guess we can sort of transition into future matchups. I know you have some stuff you wanted to go into, but
yeah, so
I'm curious about, before you get into the stuff you have laid out, I know you're the host of this, but I'm curious who you think O'Malley should fight next.
So, well, here's the thing. Cejudo and Sterling is next.
That seems locked in.
From what I'm seeing. I would love to see O'Malley Sandhagen.
Ooh. You're speaking my language.
That's the fight I would like to see.
Yes.
The fight I think they're going to make. I think it might be O'Malley Cheeto is the next fight they're going to make. I think we see it. I mean, think about it. Cheeto's on the cusp of a title shot. Yep. O'Malley's on the cusp of the title shot. Cejudo's the one getting the shot. You have also Sanhagen. So Chito, you have Chito, O'Malley, and Sanhagen. Those are the three that, like, you pick one and they can, they're the number one contender, no question about it. But apparently Cejudo's the one that's going to fight. Not only that, there is going to be a huge layoff on Sterling's part. Apparently, yep, he's not going to be fighting till the end.
What did he
say?
6 months.
Right. Yeah. So we're going to see an interim title fight, and it might be Cejudo and O'Malley too.
Honestly, I think that O'Malley Chito, because O'Malley has said, I think, and I've heard stuff from his camp, that they don't want to take a title fight immediately. They want to sort of give him the chance to get more experience and such, because the rush up the top has been so quick. I think O'Malley Chito main event for an interim title on a pay-per-view. Like, you know how we have occasionally the Colby Masvidal and the Chimaev Diaz, like these sort of non-title pay-per-views, yeah, where mm-hmm, it's a draw fighter. I think O'Malley is enough of a draw at this point to actually make that happen. Like, way more valid, and the numbers back it up way more than Masvidal, especially. I think Chito O'Malley too would sell, and I think they'll both sell the fuck out of that fight. I don't know how it goes.
So you think O'Malley would sell better than a Masvidal fight?
Yes.
Hmm.
I think O'Malley, especially Masvidal coming off the back-to-back Usman losses, like that Masvidal-Colby, like obviously Masvidal-Diaz, Masvidal-Usman won, like these were big moments for him. But O'Malley is streaking hot right now. Like,
yeah,
insane. Okay. And he has such a rabid fan base where all these people are
tuning
15-year-olds. Yeah,
there's fucking Fortnite pros out there, bro.
They're stealing their mom's credit card to pay Uncle Dana $90. All right. So, I genuinely think that that's a possibility. I don't know if the UFC will take that risk because there are so many titles now to go around. You know, we have Figueiredo Moreno 4 coming up soon. We have all these title fights that can be spread apart. We have active champions now for the first time in a while at all divisions. Like Yuri wants to fight.
Mm-hmm.
Ngannou wants to fight once he's rehabbed from the knee. All these guys want to fight at the top of divisions that are historically inactive. So I don't know if they take that risk and they just try to spread the title fights around as much as possible. But O'Malley Chito as a pay-per-view main event is a possibility. Otherwise, I think they make O'Malley Chito or O'Malley Sanhagen a fight night main event, because that's the only thing for O'Malley. We haven't seen five rounds and we need to before he gets a title shot.
Good point. Yeah. So the fight I want, O'Malley Sanhagen.
Oh my God.
The fight I think we're going to get is Sanhagen and or Chito and Cejudo for the interim title.
Interesting.
That's how I see this kind of playing out. Because if what you're saying is true about O'Malley, they don't want a title fight. Then that only leaves Sanhagen and Chito, and Cejudo is definitely if he's coming back. Like, I still don't even know.
It's only for
he's
big
in the
money.
He's in the test pool.
Yeah,
he's stirring up a lot of shit. He's talking a lot of shit. Yeah. And Dana's saying yes, we're making Cejudo. We're like the Cejudo and Sterling fight is next. Assuming that Cejudo's actually coming back, you got to give him a title shot. It's going to be X Cejudo.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
There's no other way to go.
I don't think Sterling takes a layoff for that fight. I think that he'll fight Cejudo and then take his 6-8 months, whatever. Cause he already took the year for the Jan fight where he had the neck surgery and all that shit. Right. Like he's kind of running out of excuses.
I mean, if he does, he's either going to get stripped or there's going to be an interim title fight.
Yeah. Yep. Marab kind of in the wins here but that's always the case.
We forgot about him too. I think he needs another win personally.
Well, no, but the other problem is he refuses to fight Aljo because they're in the same gym and they're training partners. Like he doesn't want a title shot. And what do you do with a fighter at that point where he's at the top of the division, he's beating your best guys, and he actively does not want the reward everyone else does. That's such a confusing spot to be in.
Yeah, that's kind of a hard position.
So I think he just does get left out in the wins, or he fights Song Yadong or someone like that, another killer that you can try to build off beating Marab.
Yeah, like if you're in the UFC's position, I'm asking you this. like as a hypothetical, you're in Dana White's position. Marab doesn't want a title shot. Do you even have him fight somebody?
Yeah, because I think you try to find the matchups where you can build a bigger star off of him, because people don't like Marab's fight style. You try to find someone who can hit him as hard as Marlon did in the first round of their fight and just puts him down and he doesn't get back up. You put, because clearly his striking is not there. And so you put him against a heavy-handed mofo like Song Yadong or Sandhagen, someone like this, where like either over the course of five rounds or in one blistering moment, like they'll try to snuff his lights down, snuff his lights out and take his mental to the deep water. And then he is another name where it's like, Marab beat Jose Aldo, Marab beat Marlon Moraes, Marab beat XYZ. And this guy beat Marab. Oh my God. Like, this is the next star of the division. So I think Dana will keep Marab active, but he's going to feed him the worst matchups. And Marab is the guy who will take them without really blinking. So I think that that's going to be his fate, unless, you know, there's some major shakeup at the top of the division. Cause I don't, you know, Cejudo beats Aljo. I don't see Marab beating Cejudo, you know? So
I think Marab is really good personally.
I think he's really good too, but he's not exciting, and he doesn't have power, and he's going to out wrestle Cejudo. Like, I don't know. It'll be interesting. I would watch that fight, but it would be interesting to see. I also think Marab's other weakness is he has no fans because his style is so boring to the casuals.
Which sucks because he's a funny guy.
And it sucks because Marab Moraes is such an all-time banger of a fight. Like, people don't remember how good that fight was. It was
that amazing. Fight was awesome.
Yeah. So, all right, we've spent enough time on bantamweights.
Yeah. So we got a couple other of really good matchups. Kind of rumored. First of all, one that just got made, Paddy the Baddie's next fight is against Jared Gordon. That's coming up on I think it's on UFC 282.
It's 282 in December. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. But what do you think about that? I mean, they're just feeding him another.
It's another guy that Paddy is probably going to beat in a less than exciting way. Like people, the Paddy thing that, you know, everyone talks about him like a super exciting knockout guy. He's a grappler. He's a wrestler. I don't know why he has this reputation of like starching dudes or like being a super action fighter. He's not. He's going to wrestle fuck another guy and tap him probably. He'll probably get a finish. But I don't know. I like that they're ramping him up slow. They're ramping him up slower than they are Molly McCann, who I believe is on this upcoming pay-per-view 281. She's fighting Erin Blanchfield, and Erin Blanchfield is going to murder her.
Yeah.
I don't understand how they took Molly McCann from fighting UFC debut prospects to fighting the best women's prospect, arguably the fight has ever, like, UFC has ever seen, ever. Like, Erin Blanchfield is legitimately terrifying. If you watch her fight, she fucks up people that are other hyped prospects, and she makes them look like babies. Who was it? Macy Barber or
Miranda?
No, it was Miranda Maverick, I think.
Oh, you're right. It might have been both of them. Miranda Maverick.
It might have been both of them, but Miranda Maverick was like riding this amazing win streak, got robbed against Macy Barber. Everyone's like, Miranda Maverick's so good. Erin Blanchfield takes her to the deep water and fucks her up. And now they're playing her against Molly McCann. I don't know about that fight. Molly McCann's kind of a draw for you, but at the same time, who cares? Paddy, they're building slower. They're kind of taking the Sean O'Malley route, but I think it's going to be harder to build him into something like Sean O'Malley when he's not starching dudes. So it'll be interesting to see if he's going against
Jared Gordon.
Yeah.
Interesting that you think Paddy's going to destroy Jared Gordon. I think Jared Gordon's going to fuck up Paddy.
Ooh, you think this is the hype train ender?
I mean, Jared Gordon's a pretty good striker.
He's pretty good, but we've seen Paddy against pretty good strikers, and
I think Paddy is going to submit Jared Gordon. For the record.
Yeah.
But Jared Gordon's going to piece him up a little bit for sure.
Yeah. The same way Jordan Leavitt did, and the same way Mario. Fuck. What was the dude's name? The dude on his debut. It was some stupid Italian kid who has never fought in the UFC since. Mario something or other. They signed him to fight Paddy and lose.
It was
Was it Luigi, Luigi. And not Mario?
It was Luigi Vendramini.
It was Luigi. I didn't Google that. I just was like, I think I'm getting the wrong Mario brother.
You did.
Yeah.
You did.
Yeah,
Luigi. That's actually funny.
That guy had some decent striking on the feet, and then Patty almost got knocked down a couple times and was like, oh shit, I got to submit this dude, and did it.
Right.
So well, I don't know.
Next up.
Yeah. Hit me with some
so hotter names. I'll hit you with the rumor that you just told me wasn't actually slated to happen, that I want to happen. Colby Shemaev. I hope it happens. That's all I want to say about too. That. I just want to put that out in the universe. I want that fight to happen. Please.
Chimaev kills him. Probably.
Nah.
We see what Chimaev does. To
I'm a mark
at this
for Colby.
Point.
I can't bet against Colby.
But what's Colby's style? Barely outstriking you and then baiting you into places where he can hit reactive freestyle wrestling takedowns and then do nothing with them and dominate you with control time.
Colby is a volume striker. He does not get tired.
Well, yeah.
Colby is a volume striker. He will pressure the shit out of you until you just can't. The
Do you
one
know who else
problem
is a
we
volume
saw.
Striker?
All right, the reason why I'm picking Colby to win is because of the Burns Chimaev fight. Do you remember what happened in round three?
We saw post COVID Chimaev got gassed at round three of that fight. Yeah,
he got 100%. Gassed. He got gassed.
Yeah.
If that happens and it's Colby, Colby's winning that fight. That's why I'm picking Colby. And I think that's what's going to happen. I think Chimaev's weakness is his gas tank.
I think Chimaev, Kevin Holland's pretty much everyone in the division, except for the very, very, very top. Like Usman, and the top with like takedown
Colby.
Defense. Usman, Burns.
Colby.
I don't know, man. And the other part
You're
is,
wrong.
Okay, so here's the part that is the X factor for me. Colby is a small 170-er. Like, Colby would be good at 165 if UFC had a 165 division or a 160. Chimaev is a huge 170-er who competes with middleweights. Like, the size difference there is going to be major, and I think that Colby is good at defending takedowns against dudes his own size. I will be interested to see if he can defend against someone who is a genuine massive like physical problem at that weight class.
I honestly think because Colby for one has wrestled
his whole life. Yeah, his whole life.
So he's been wrestling people bigger than him for longer than we probably give him
absolutely.
Credit for.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not shitting on Colby here, by the way. I think Chimaev is insane.
Your pick. I honestly do because the problems that we've seen Colby have are against people that are big for the weight class. Usman. Yeah.
Yep.
That's the kink in the armor for him.
Yeah.
Just what I've seen from Chimaev, I just think I think Chimaev would be very he would be making a mistake for wrestling Colby.
Yeah, I agree. I think he didn't even wrestle Burns. Well, he shot a couple times, right? He shot on the end of rounds.
So.
He shot at the end of one round and they like slapped each other and that was about it. Yeah.
I don't see Shemaev's wrestling being a problem for Colby because Colby's wrestling is a problem for everybody.
Yeah.
And just because he's a Division I wrestler. I mean, he's an All-American. So I feel like we see an on-the-feet stand-up war from those two, personally, because it's a wrestler versus a wrestler. That's what fucking
happens
when you get two grapplers against each other.
Bilal Sean Brady, yeah. Same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
I would love to see it. Make it five rounds, please, for the love of God.
Make it five rounds, and I see Chimaev gassing out. I take Colby on that fight. Because I am a mark.
Yeah.
I'm saying that right now. I am a mark. I love Colby.
I'm a fan, and I'm a fan of...
This is a biased pick.
If you're a dude with a V at the end of your name and you have an Abe Lincoln beard, I am 90% more likely to like you. So I'm a mark for the other side.
I feel that. I feel that. Speaking of marks.
Oh boy.
Speaking of being a mark, you are a big, big Yuri mark. Big Yuri mark, dude.
Yes. Most tested UFC athlete in the entire USADA pool, and it's not close simply because they don't think he can be this good naturally. 26
he got
tests
like
or whatever.
26
it
times this
it's
year.
It's ridiculous.
26.
He's just that good.
Anyway, that's Yeah, for every time he's read the Book of Five Rings, he's gotten tested.
No, USADA. They're not even close to matching that number.
Literally, the whole reason we're called the Bullshito Podcast is because of him.
He reads it front to back every day. That's his warm-up.
Every day.
Is speed reading the Book of Five Rings.
You go to the gym, fucking... All right. fucking scream. Read the Book of Five Rings, scream in a valley, train.
Go dismantle home. Dismantle the entire again. Competition.
Read the Book of Five Rings, eat, train again, sleep. That's Yuri's day.
Like, okay, tell me your Yuri thing, because I'll go on and on. I was about to bring up the Vadim Nemkov fight again, so please stop me. Please cut
I know
me
this
off.
Is kind of yeah. I know this is kind of random, but we'll get into the next future fight that I have on the docket here.
Yeah.
Did you know that this is an upcoming fight, UFC 282, Yuri Prochazka and Glover Teixeira is the announced main event now.
Oh,
I believe it is the announced main event. When I check the UFC page and I go to the pay-per-view, it says UFC 282, Prochazka Teixeira 2.
Interesting. If that's accurate and they're not just calling it that as like a subtitle, a placeholder subtitle, then RIP John Jones ever fighting again.
Do you want to hear the card?
Well, it's Yuri Teixeira and then a bunch of random people and Darren Till, who isn't actually going to fight because he has an eye injury yet again. Yeah.
So,
Robbie Lawler, Santiago Ponzinibbio,
Gustafsson and Ovin St. Preux.
Oh,
we got Edmund Sabazian in the early prelims. We got Alexander Hernandez, Joaquin Buckley against Chris Curtis, which is actually a very underrated fight.
That's a fun fight. But Shabazzian and I just put my head in my hands.
Yeah. Head movement. He needs to get a new coach.
Oh my God. Yes, please.
But we have the prelims as Raul Rosas Jr.
Nice.
The youngest UFC fighter. The 17-year-old kid is on that card.
Who's he fighting?
Jay Perrin.
Don't know who that is. Great. He'll probably win. It was a Luigi.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to call those guys from now on. The guys that get signed to lose. The Chris Moutinhos of the world. Chris Moutinho was a great Luigi.
First of all, that's the best. That's the, like, when you make a tier list of Luigis,
he's the best.
S tier is Chris Moutinho. S tier. That fight with Sean O'Malley was insane.
It was great.
Me and Bridget were just like screaming. Like, we were just like, holy shit, he keeps getting hit in the head and just keeps walking forward.
What a truly elite Luigi. Well, at some point, we'll make a list of guys that got signed simply to lose to hot prospects.
Yep.
Yeah. But, another Jay Perrin and another Luigi.
Yeah. They gave him another Luigi. We have on the prelims as well, we have Chris Daukaus and Yarizinho Rosenstruck. You have Bryce Mitchell and Ilya Topuria.
That's going to be fun.
On the main card.
Didn't they move Bo Nickel off of this card? Like,
yes.
It was Bo Nickel Pickett was going to be on this card, and then they moved
right.
it. Yeah?
Right.
Okay, all right. I'm not always remembering.
And then you have the Darren Till, Dricus Duplessis. You have Patty Pimblett, Jared Gordon, which is kind of a weird...
Pending cancellation because Darren Till has another injury and will pull out. It's the Darren Till story.
I hate to say it. I'm a big Darren Till fan, but yeah, he might pull out.
Yeah.
And then you got Jan Blachowicz and Magomed Ankalaev as the co-main.
Great fight.
Should be five rounds. I heard somebody, I think I saw this on the Ariel Helwani show the other day, that said any contender fight should be a five round fight. And I agree.
If it's like a solidified number one contender fight, like they're basically calling it a title eliminator. And clearly we don't have those formally in UFC as we do in boxing and such, but it should be, even if it is the co-main on a card, it should, like, why are we wasting five round fights on fucking Nick Diaz, Robbie Lawler? And we're not giving them to Yaa Blachowicz, Magomed Ankalaev, which would be a five round fight on any fight night card.
And it would
automatically
be awesome
be the main event and it would be great. Yeah. Honestly, that the fact that it's three rounds probably is good for me because I love Jan. And I think if Ankalaev has five rounds, Ankalaev probably wins. But Jan in a three-round fight, the Polish power is undefeated.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But listen, any more. I will watch the sleepiest pay-per-view of all time. You could have read me five random names there in terms of about order. And I would be like, is Yuri Prohaska at the top of the card? I am tuning in. I am going to be alert and energized and probably a little bit drunk and having a great time. I was drunk for Prohaska to Shira too. And I kept, this is a legit story. You can ask my friends. I was sitting against my couch on the floor with my legs under the coffee table, a shot of vodka in my hand, my fourth of the night. And I was watching them. And the entire 25-minute fight, I was going, they're so stupid, and giggling as hard as I possibly could. Because like Yuri was doing his stupid shit, like turning his shoulder away, and Clever Teixeira would just walk into teeps, and they kept like random reversals were happening. And I was like, this fight is so ridiculous and dumb. And I was just like having the time of my life drunk. I don't really drink like that anymore, but I will drink for any Yuri Prohaska title fight from now on. Okay. I fucking love that dude.
Fair play.
Yeah, he's so good.
So the Yuri thing that I wanted to bring up, and I know we don't want to get into predictions too early, but I've just read reports that Yuri slept in a dark room for 3 days in preparation for this fight. He did nothing except drink water and just winning. Sit in a dark room for winning. 3 days. Yuri Prohaska by murder. It's official.
Glover Teixeira. By murder. Glover Teixeira has like been training in Connecticut.
He does not have a chance.
Getting his get-ups better, getting his dirty boxing better.
It's not going to matter.
Yuri is sharpening the katana of the mind. All right?
Yes.
Glover does not stand a fucking chance.
Not a shot. He was in a dark room for three. You don't do that unless you get a concussion. You literally don't do that unless you get a fucking concussion. And he's just like, yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm just going to do it because I need my mind to be sharp.
You know what he was doing in there? He was drinking water and he was reading the Book of Five Rings from
memory.
Over and over again. From memory, he was reciting it because he couldn't
from
read.
From memory,
in the dark.
he was reading the book.
He was reading like the 3D model of the book that he has in his head memorized. Yeah. No, I'm all in. All right,
it's Yuri's, all in. Yuri by
had
murder.
He's had three fights in the UFC, and I'm sold. He's the best fighter alive. I don't
by
care.
By murder.
Should be
by
pound
murder.
For pound number one. Don't care. Don't care. Didn't ask. 100%. Alexander Volkanovski's wins are meaningless.
Alexander Volkanovski. Yuri Prohaska. Yeah. Alexander Volkanovski.
I'm such
that's
a mark,
my,
dude. I'm
that's
such
my
a mark.
Top. That's my top four. Right there.
I'm so glad I'm being introduced to this headline from you, because people are getting my genuine, unadulterated, I fucking love Yuri Prohaska reaction, and not my, oh yeah, I heard about that shit.
That's like, why we are the Bullshito Podcast.
I love it, dude. Yuri should just live in a sensory deprivation tank, and he'll come out in better shape than ever.
Dude, one
I'm
day,
such a believer.
We're going to interview Yuri. One day.
I need it, dude. I'll learn
one
some
day.
Czech. I don't care. He's so good. All of the stupid tweets that he puts out where like he was going to fight Jan and he was like, Czech katana versus Polish longsword. Let's do it in Warsaw. I'm like, this is so fucking dumb. I love it.
Dude, Yuri is a national treasure.
An international
I'm surprised
treasure.
He's not as, yeah, he's, I'm surprised he's not a bigger star than he is.
Have you seen?
I really, one no, day no. He's going to be a huge star. He's going to be a big star.
Go look at the videos of him bring the belt back to Prague. He is one of the most loved people in the Czech Republic. They adore that.
Well,
guy.
Yeah, there. Yeah. I'm talking about internationally. I think he's going to be
real
a star.
Well,
yo,
I'm Czech and Slovak. All right, I can say that. But yeah, Czech Republic not relevant. People don't know. People can't name a city from there. All right, there's no good soccer players from there. That's how you know it's fucking irrelevant. There are more relevant soccer players from the fucking Cote d'Ivoire than there are from Czech Republic. All right, but jeez. Man, yeah, Yuri, international star. 2024
will be
because
he'll fight
Glover and he'll knock him out, and then he'll fight Jan and he'll knock him out, and then he'll start calling out John Jones, and that's when it'll really ramp up. I can't wait either.
Speaking, what were you gonna say?
No, go ahead. I don't want to ruin it.
Speaking of John Jones,
oh boy,
Stipe John Jones, the smoke is billowing out from the forest with those rumors right now.
It was smoke for December, and now it's not going to happen in December because it's not going to be 2022.
First of all, there's been smoke for a John Jones heavyweight move since 2013.
Literally.
Okay, let's just first put that out there.
He knocked out Vitor Belfort, and he was like, yeah, these light heavyweights aren't doing it.
I'm going to heavyweight.
I'm going to move up, yeah.
Yeah, so that was 10 years ago.
Every time he commits a felony, he's like, I'm going to take a year off and swear off alcohol in bulk. And dude, then we said the same thing happens every time.
The one thing that I look for on Twitter, like the couple things that I'll look for on Twitter is Conor McGregor after a Dagestani win.
Yeah.
Chael Sonnen after a John Jones confirmed felony leaked to the media. Those are the two fucking Twitters that I will literally look up. Like, okay, what's Chael Sonnen going to say? That and or when Jake Paul fights with Chael Sonnen. Chael Sonnen, first of all. Funny as shit. I love Chael
Sonnen. Elite Twitter account, elite YouTube account.
Elite Twitter account. Dude, some of the tweets that he had during the Jake Paul Ben Askren fight were fucking hilarious. He just went off on Oscar De La Hoya. But anyways.
Oscar De La Hoya, when there were just random concerts in the middle, he was tweeting like, what are we watching right now? Is this like a concert for my 13-year-old daughter or whatever? He was going off. It was great.
Dude, oh, Chael Sonnen, what a legend.
But anyway, this all comes back to you can't see that I'm uncrossing my legs like Chael. This all comes back to John Jones.
Yeah, this all comes back to John Jones. And you know what? Where does Kevin Lee fit into all of this?
What about Kamaru Usman?
Oh, man. Shout out Chael Sonnen. Shout out Chael Sonnen. But yeah. John Jones and Stipe. First of all, is it even going to happen?
No, my money is on no. We both are on record in our personal lives saying that John will never fight again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So yeah. I don't think because if you think about it during COVID, when he was, when he first, did not like fight at all. Like when he was on this big absence
after the Reyes
thing, he was saying,
thing, yeah,
right. After the Reyes thing, he was saying that, hey, you got to pay me $10 million to fight or I'm not fighting at all. Yeah. We're going to pay. First of all, like John isn't that much of a draw. He's not a $10 million draw. He's not a Conor McGregor or anything like that. I agree that MMA fighters should be paid more as a whole, but giving John Jones $10 million is like giving a school shooter a machine gun.
Oh boy.
That's
such an edgy yet apt analogy. I love it.
Well, I mean, like, it's because literally what is he going to do? He's going to buy coke.
Yeah.
Beat his wife.
He's going to use those $10 million to make other people's lives measurably worse. Just like a school shooter with an assault rifle.
Right. Exactly. It's literally like, that's what you do when you give John Jones $10 million.
Oh,
I thought it was a perfect analogy.
It was great. I raised my eyebrows at first. I was like, oh boy, we're hitting the edge. And then it just was like completely correct. I'm like, oh yeah, that's accurate.
Listen, that's the only time I will make a joke like that. I promise.
It's about John Jones.
I promise. Yeah. I had to think of something on the fly. And I was like, giving a toddler a machine gun. I'm like, no. Because this guy's a criminal. This guy's a fucking criminal. This guy's a straight up felon, dude.
Yeah, like, it's really funny because you can compare this to Cejudo being like back up the Brinks truck. Because they stopped fighting around the same time. Cejudo was like, if Dana wants me to fight again, he's going to have to back up the Brinks truck. And now Cejudo is begging for a title shot because he wants to fight again before his athletic prime is over. And John does not care.
Yeah.
If John cared, we would be seeing John Yeary.
We would have already seen
John. In December. Yeah, we would have already seen John. Or we would be seeing John Yeary imminently. And neither of those things are happening. Because John talks so much shit about this class of light heavyweights is so beneath me. You know, I easily beat Reyes, and then, you know, Reyes is like the best that I've ever fought, but at the same time, he's the worst that I've ever fought. He sucks. Like his whole landscape in terms of looking at things rationally is confused. But
yeah,
you know, you would think that if he actually felt that way, he would have fought Yuri by now, or he would have been posturing to fight Yuri by now, but no. And he's not selling the Stipe fight. And Stipe really wants that fight, and it's still not getting made. Like, when the opponent really wants the fight, and it's still not getting made, it just means that you don't want to fight. You don't want to do it.
Yeah, I mean, he's had plenty of opportunities to come back. Plenty. Plenty of opportunities to come back. But yeah, he has sad. So
it's sad because he's a historically great athlete. You know, the potential, absolutely, the potential that was lost even with the first PED pop will never get back in terms of all time great. And he still might be the best ever. There's a case to be made. I wouldn't make it, but man, it's so sad that we're not going to see him live up to his full potential ever. And, you know, but I'm at peace with that. I'm at peace with, we're never going to see John Jones fight again. And, you know, we keep getting better and better light heavyweight moments. We keep getting better and better heavyweight moments. The divisions aren't lacking for not having him. And
no,
I think that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it is what it is. We're just calling it the way we see it.
Yep.
There's a lot of people that feel the same way about it that we do. I mean, just like,
I think that rationally every MMA journalist and expert feels the same way. Like Ariel and Luke Thomas and all these people who, you know, it's their brands. They have to talk about him. But like, if you got Ariel alone one-on-one, he'd be like, yeah, John's not fighting again.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's how I feel. All right.
Yeah.
Well, Sam, do you have anything else that you want to talk about before we get into our recaps of the UFC events that one just transpired? We had Calvin Kattar versus Arnold Allen, and we also had Anderson Silva, Jake Paul. We can touch on that. You have anything else you want to add before we get into that?
No. We can sort of transition into the Arnold Allen thing with how cursed is 2022 fight nights, because
four injuries on the main cards this year. Do you know how many there are total in all of UFC history main events for injuries?
You have stats here. Oh, hell yeah.
There's four. So this year alone, four main events have been ruined because of injury, not pre fight injuries, but in the fight injuries.
Aspinall
for this year.
Aspinall Kattar, Rockich. Kattar.
Yep.
And I'm totally blanking on one that I'm sure is going to be stupidly obvious. What's the fourth one?
I don't know, actually.
Because there is a fourth one.
There
I
is
know
a fourth
it,
one.
Because I've seen all these stats.
The stat is four for this year. Guess how many there are total?
How many?
13 of all time.
Wow. We're just uniquely cursed.
So it was 9 before this year.
Jeez. And this was a sad one too, because I knew the knee was compromised by the end of the first round, and then he came back out and immediately it popped again. And it might even be worse now, where, like, you know, people try to football players will go try to run on like a sprained ACL and then they tear the ACL, the MCL, the LCL. I'm worried for Kattar's knee at this point. But props to him trying to fight through it. It was kind of worse than the Aspinall one, where the knee just pops and then it's over. What's the fourth one?
Song Yadong and Corey Sandhagen. Brian Ortega. It was Brian Ortega.
Brian Ortega.
The shoulder.
That's the one. All right. Because I was so excited for that
Yair
fight too. Yeah, I was.
Because it was Yair Ortega. It was Rakic Blachowicz. It was
Aspinall.
Kattar. Yeah, Tom Aspinall, Curtis Blaydes, and then Rocket or Kattar and fucking Arnold Allen.
Yeah. And Allen, it's sad too, because it's another one of these fights where it happens so early that you don't get a chance. Like, Blachowicz Rocket is arguably the best one, because at least there were two rounds of action before then. But Allen gets a win that isn't really deserved, and no fault to him, obviously, but like, he didn't win that fight. Kattar didn't lose that fight. The fight ended and someone had to be declared winner, and there wasn't enough of a performance there where you could say, okay, Allen lost this by freak injury, but he can still move up in competition.
It did happen. The one positive about the Arnold Allen Calvin Kattar injury thing is that it happened in the second round. So we got to see a round of action between the two. And we saw Arnold Allen outstrike Calvin Kattar.
Arguably because it popped at the end of the first round. You can see it go because he's sitting there against the cage after Arnold takes him down. And you can see that the knee buckled and that he's not able to put weight on it. And he's kind of agonized. So the injury actually happened at the end of the first. And then he comes out and tries to stand on it in the second, and it gets worse. So I think he probably had a minor tear or like a knee sprain or something like that in the first. But go watch it back, because he has the injury, the initial injury at the first, and then he tries to put weight on it to either check or step away from a leg kick at the beginning of the second round, and that's when the whole knee just crumbles in the dust.
You could even see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, it was like the Danilo Gallinari injury.
Oh my God, it was so bad. Yeah.
It was very bad.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel bad for Cater. He's always game. He's such a fun fighter to watch. He was probably going to lose this fight because Allen is a superstar, in my opinion, at featherweight.
He's a stud. Like,
he's really cool. Really fun fighter, really versatile, really adaptable, good at changing game plans, which Cater is not. Cater has one game plan for every fight.
He's a smooth southpaw striker too.
Yeah, really nice. British, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, what a con in the pros and cons analysis.
Yeah.
But British. Yeah.
Pro, good striking, adaptable, con, British.
Yeah, there is one really funny video that I recommend all five viewers of this podcast check out, which is the 5-minute video
of
Arnold Allen and his dad working out in his dad's backyard gym. And it is the most British backyard gym I've ever seen, because it's like a squat rack that was designed before they knew how to build squat racks in like 1918, and a barbell that I am almost positive the weights cannot be removed from because they are so rusted onto the barbell, and the squat rack itself is so rusted. And I think, like, at this point, Arnold Allen has like natural immunity to tetanus because he's lifted all of these completely fucked metal objects so many times. Like, please go watch these clips, because his dad looks like a retired 70-year-old power lifter where like he has the giant gut, but it's all solid. It's so funny, dude. It's one of the funniest, most British videos I've ever seen in my life.
Top 10 British videos of all time.
Honestly. But yeah, other than that, the card kind of sucked. Tim Means Max Griffin was boring, and that was the only other fight I was looking forward to. Everything else was garbage.
I like Tim Means too. I thought that fight was going to be a lot more action packed than it was.
Cursed card in general. And then the Jake Paul event was not better. Unfortunately, like at least someone won on the Allen Cater fight that I liked. I liked Arnold Allen. I don't like Jake Paul. I don't really want to talk about that fight. I just kind of want to talk about the aftermath, which is something even more frustrating that I've seen. The WBC is going to rank Jake Paul. I've heard like serious boxing insiders talking about this, that it's imminent, that the WBC is looking at ranking him at cruiserweight. This is a fucking travesty for the sport of boxing. It's really sad. I'm upset about it. This next step up in competition, I know he called out Canelo, he should fight Beterbiev. I need to see him get nailed to the fucking canvas one time, please. I need inject it into my veins. Have him fight one real champion boxer, please. I need it. Oh, because he won this fight. Like, all the YouTube fans who hate him are like, oh, he didn't win this fight. It was close rounds. Nah, he beat Anderson Silva.
Yeah, he beat Anderson.
It was 47-year-old Anderson Silva. That's not a feather in your cap to get a fucking world ranking.
Yeah, no. I mean, he was the best opponent he's faced so far.
Yeah, and now he's calling out Nate Diaz, who might be worse.
Yeah, who's worse, definitely worse.
Yeah.
Just because of the size difference, not even because of the skills. I think Nate definitely has better boxing skill, but the size difference isn't, like, Jake Paul is going to definitely win that fight.
Yep. He called out Nate Diaz, and I was like, okay, it makes sense. Like, he just wants to fight more MMA fighters. Then he called out Canelo, and I actually couldn't stop laughing. I was like, I don't care if you're 20 pounds heavier than Canelo. Canelo's going to do terrible things to you. Canelo's going to hit the cleanest shoulder roll into lead uppercut of all time and just turn your brain off. I swear to God. Like, please, I would watch that too.
Canelo is going to just literally eat your ribs.
Yeah.
Like, not even with his hands. Like, he's going to just go to your body with head movement and then just take a chunk out of your ribs. And then throw that fucking stupid hook uppercut to it, right?
Yep,
right there.
Yep. Exactly the one that I'm thinking of too. Yeah, the one he who is the Billy Joe Saunders where he took out his orbital with that shot because yeah. Billy Joe ducked into
but
it.
But that to the body instead of the head.
Yeah, that to the body. I know that it's never gonna happen, but every day I pray that Jake Paul fights a real boxer one time. He's like in the press conference, he's like, You wanted me to fight a real boxer? Bitch, I tried. I'm like, Tommy Fury?
Tommy Fury, your idea of a real boxer, bro.
That was your attempt?
Cause guess what? Tommy has the same problem you do, fuckface.
Yeah, he sucks. He doesn't fight real boxers.
No fucking boxers yet.
Yeah, if you really want to try to, you know, kids always chase your dreams. I'm going to try to be a champion boxer. Fight some contenders. You don't even need to fight someone who's a current title holder. There could be some no name cruiserweight because who knows any cruiserweights.
Haseem Rahman was actually a good opponent for him.
Give him Haseem Rahman. That would be great.
That would have been a good fight for Jake. I do believe that.
Because it's sad that people are like, oh, Jake Paul seems pretty good. He was evenly matched. This was an even fight with Jake eventually taking the lead.
With a 47-year-old
washed Anderson Silva who is like 4-2 in boxing.
And he couldn't even use his legs, which are literally his main weapons.
Yeah. Like, and Ariel is even mentioning it on the broadcast when they don't have to sell the fight anymore. Ariel is color commentating and be like, yeah, Anderson Silva has a lot of knockout highlights, but it's all kicking and kneeing people. Like, he really doesn't knock people out with his hand. I'm like, you're trying to sell this fight, Ariel. I hope you understand
wait,
that.
There is one.
The Forrest Griffin one, right?
Yep, yeah. That's the one.
Classic.
Sorry, man. Forrest.
Sorry, Forrest. But yeah,
Holy shit.
I watched that whole main card. I regret every second of it. Even the actual boxers on it weren't good. I miss who is it? The girl he had on his card that one time, Amanda Serrano. I miss seeing her just beat random women compared to
because she's fun to watch.
Yeah, it was like a shitty 112 title fight or whatever it was. Yeah, I was just like, oh god, please.
Jake Paul not only puts on boring cards, but he's also just a boring fighter.
Yeah, he has a big overhand right hand, and he sometimes jabs, but he only jabs to set up the overhand right hand.
Right.
And it's like, okay, do you have any more tricks?
please? Like,
develop a hook or a uppercut? Like, Anderson was killing him with the uppercuts, and he had nothing back in the clinch every time. Every time Anderson clinched, I was like, okay, this is going to be two clean shots right here for Anderson with no retribution.
Right, yeah, and, exactly.
And Jake had no tricks for that. But yeah, I can't believe I'm wasting this amount of breath on this. He's going to fight Nate Diaz. He's probably going to knock out Nate Diaz or beat him into a pulp. I don't care which. And then he's going to call out like at that point, Robbie Lawler will have retired from MMA. So he'll call out Robbie Lawler. He'll just keep recycling these retired or imminently retired MMA fighters. That'll be the plan.
Well, sorry, my cat just walked.
No, you're
my
fine.
Door, bro.
Alexi Olenek versus Jake Paul win.
Yeah. I was going to say, did you hear Uriah Hall call out Jake Paul?
Oh, God. That fight was so bad, too. I wiped that fight from my brain. Oh,
listen, I mean, if you watched that fight, you couldn't see that Uriah Hall wasn't, like, he wasn't trying.
Yeah, but that's not a good thing.
Well, he didn't even try.
I wanted to see Le'Veon Bell get knocked out as recompense for my fantasy football drafts. Right. I would take Le'Veon Bell and then he would go to Miami and make rap videos. Bruh. It was so bad. What was that year? 2017? Where they're like, oh yeah, Le'Veon Bell, best running back in the league. And he's like, actually, I want to be a rapper now. And just dipped. And just left the Steelers facility. Yeah. Fucked my whole life up.
Damn, bro.
I wanted him to get knocked out and not whatever it was, 40-26 or whatever it turned out to be, 40-36.
Yeah, that's fucking disrespectful, bro. God, no, dang.
I'm a hater. I know. But yeah, I don't know. It was a bad event. And way more people, I think, watched it than watched Vasily Lomachenko, which is a travesty.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Boxing is in a weird state right now. It's sad. I like the sport, but the meta of the sport has become so, like, we're not getting Spence Crawford. No, the best are never going to fight the best except at heavyweight, which is, you know, the most the least technical. So I don't know. Boxing, weird spot. MMA getting used for brownie points by Jake Paul.
Right. Eh. I mean, the fighters union that apparently they agreed to start might actually be cool.
Cool. If Jake Paul actually is able to get that off the ground and it has impact, then I'll retract everything I've ever said about him. But
I won't. He's still a boring fighter.
Well, yeah, he's still a boring fighter, but I also think he's like a piece of shit. If he creates a union for fighters, which is something that no one has ever successfully done, I will take back that he is a piece of shit. He'll be a boring fighter that did some good in the world of MMA and boxing. And I would be proud
of
that.
Not in the world of NFTs or...
No.
He did good in the world of pyramid schemes.
He did. I don't know. Did good in the world of not filming yourself in a suicide forest.
Shout out Logan.
That was the other brother. Yeah.
Shout out Logan.
Fuck, man.
In the WWE now.
Now I want to go watch Logan Floyd again. I don't, but I feel like I have to because I watched that fight live too. I stayed up to watch that. Just absolute sleeper.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah. A lot of boxing fights are sleepers these days.
When Floyd hit him and then like held him up to make sure that the fight would keep going. Oh man. I'll never forget.
Yeah, I'll never forget that. That was so funny.
Do you have any last topics before we wrap it up?
Well, we do have UFC 281 coming up, which is what we're going to go over in our next episode in depth.
Yes.
But just a quick overall glance at the card.
It's a good one. The top is good, and all the prelim stuff that they've booked is also really, really good. Like Dominic Reyes is on the prelims. Brad Riddell is on the prelims. I think isn't it Brad Riddell, Renato Moicano? That was originally booked. I don't know if it's that anymore.
Yeah.
That's such a fun fight.
That's the featured prelim.
That rules.
So if we go from the bottom up, Carlos Olberg is fighting.
Cool.
Adesanya disciple.
Yeah, he's the most boring CKB guy, but it'll be fun.
Right. Kovalkovich.
Kovalkachik, excuse
you. Yeah, Kovalkachik. Sorry. The featured early prelim is actually a fun fight. Otman Azaitar and Matt Frivola, the steamroller.
I like Matt Frivola. That'll be cool. I don't know the other guy, but I like Matt Frivola.
Oh, Otman Azaitar? You mean the guy that fucking had something in his suitcase and dropped it off on the Dubai, off the side of the Dubai hotel and then got kicked out of the UFC for a couple months? And then Ali Abdullah. Yeah, he's back. That's him.
Bring him back. Let's go. All right. I'm rooting for him. I'm all in on Otman Azaitar.
What was in the suitcase? What was in the suitcase?
We'll never know.
Just fucking femboy Twitter posts and shit. Just papers of femboy Twitter. We'll never know. Anyways.
His Reddit search history.
There's a guy named Wellington fighting on the prelims, which I think is funny. Wellington Turman and Andre Petrosky.
Wellington Turman is pretty cool. He's a Brazilian guy, has some cool submissions. I think he fought in Jungle Fight and did some submission grappling as well. He was overhyped at the beginning and hasn't really delivered as much, but he'll be cool.
I mean, his name is Wellington, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and you would think that he was either British or Australian with that name, and he is neither. He is Brazilian.
He's Brazilian.
Yeah.
And then you have the aforementioned Aaron Blanchfield, Molly McCann fight.
Straight up murder. I'm putting the mortgage on Aaron Blanchfield.
Yeah,
and with that statement, I have doomed her, and Molly McCann will win by knockout.
Maybe Molly McCann can win that fight, in my opinion.
I disagree, but I respect.
I think she can win the. I didn't say she would, and is likely to.
I think she can win the Powerball tomorrow.
I mean, all right, fair enough.
Yeah,
fair enough. But. I think, okay, so then we have Dominic Reyes and Ryan Spann.
Disrespectful to Dominic Reyes that he's not on the main card, but I get it.
Yeah, I mean,
he went from four straight main events, I think, because Reyes-Weidman was a main event as well. Yeah. So Reyes-Weidman, Reyes-Jones, Reyes-Blahovic, and Reyes-Prohaska were all main events.
Yeah.
No. Reyes Blahovic was a co-main, but they were all like top of the card.
Either way,
five rounders.
Still in the top of the card.
Yeah, top of the card. To now he's not even the featured prelim. That's kind of crazy.
Well, I mean, you could definitely replace the Carla as well. I'm just kidding. I'm not going to say that about Carla Esparza.
Listen, Zhang, we don't need to watch that fight. We could just see in, you know, Ryan Spann is fighting Dominic Reyes and a little Chiron comes up. That's just Zhang Weili, victorious TKO round one against Carla Esparza.
Zhang is going to
make sense.
Destroy.
Yeah. Checks out.
The featured prelims was the Ryan Spann, Dominic Reyes, and then Brad Riddell, Renato Moicano.
Firefight. Love that booking. Is that at featherweight or lightweight? I'm curious.
That is at lightweight.
Okay. So lightweight, Renato Moicano, who is, I believe, 1-2 at lightweight.
Yeah, I think it's a perfect fight to give Brad Riddell. I still think he loses.
Awesome fight for both of them. I don't care who wins. I think it's going to be awesome. It's like Brad Riddell, Drew Dober level of just like back and forth nonsense awesomeness. It's going to be great.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then now that we've said that, it's going to be so boring.
True.
Yeah.
Our main event, the main card. I mean, we have obviously the main event, Israel Adesanya, Alex Pereira.
I will talk more about this fight on our next episode. Yeah, I'm so excited
for that fight.
Yeah, and I'm excited to talk about it with you because I think it's we're both striking people.
We'll save that.
It's all striking. So let's talk about that later.
Yeah, we will save that for the next episode for sure.
Yep.
We have Carla Esparza, Weili Zhang. We already touched on that.
Getting
and then we got some interesting main card fights on the bottom here. First, the inaugural main card fight, Dan Hooker, Claudio Puelles.
I like Claudio Puelles. I think
I think
Dan Hooker bounces back, but Claudio has a shot. I hope Dan Hooker bounces back because he was one half of one of my favorite fights ever, Hooker Poirier, which
Hooker Poirier was a based fight.
And I think Hooker won. That's my controversial take, but
I think there's more controversial takes, like saying O'Malley clearly won against Young.
Yeah. But I think Hooker won that fight, and I hope he gets back to form because at this point he's lost to everyone except like who did he beat? Nasrat Haqparast. Who was that win? So sad. But we'll see what happens there. If Claudio Puelles wins, it's another good win for him. I don't see Dan Hooker ever going away from the UFC because he's an action fighter. He gets booked in a lot of fights. He shows up to fights. He makes weight. He does what he's supposed to do, and the UFC loves him, and we love him. So he'll stick
around. And he's fun to watch.
And he's CKB, and they'll do anything for that gym to stick around because Adesanya.
Yeah, first of all, CKB is an awesome gym. I would love to go there someday.
Yep.
I would love to go there someday. Next up, a kind of surprise fight that I actually didn't think would get made at all. I never even thought about it. But Frankie Edgar and Chris Gutierrez.
It's so that Frankie Edgar can retire in New York.
Yeah, that's his last fight. I think Frankie Edgar loses that fight, personally.
Yep, I agree.
But then we get to the real fun here. And one of the two matchups, actually, I might even be looking forward to this one more than... as much, not more than the main event, definitely more than the co-main event, but as much as the main event, I'm looking forward towards Dustin Poirier, Michael Chandler. I will also reserve the right to speak of that fight until the next show. That's going to be a fun fight.
I agree. I will just say, I will not do any analysis. It is fucking based that the UFC completed the violence quadrangle of Eddie Alvarez, Justin Gaethje, Dustin Poirier, Michael Chandler, where if this fight goes off without a hitch, all four of those amazing lightweight action fighters will have fought each other in every combination possible. And I think that is fucking cool.
Yeah, that's really cool.
That's all I have to say on that.
Actually really cool.
Super neat. We can look at this era of white guys with heavy hands who single-handedly kept lightweight alive for like 5 years. We can look at this generation and say who is the best out of like a mini tournament.
Yeah, I mean, especially now that they're all on the cusp of one last title. Every single one of them are on the cusp of one last title shot. I mean, I see all of them retiring after each of them get a title shot, personally.
Most likely,
because Justin Gaethje already said he's got one last run. I don't see Dustin Poirier doing another run unless he goes up to 170. Michael Chandler's already up there in age. He's 36 currently.
And Alvarez is the closest to retirement.
And Alvarez is exactly. Alvarez is kind of already washed at this point, which kind of sucks because he's a Philly guy. Shout out Eddie Alvarez. I love Eddie Alvarez. I hope I meet him someday. But
awesome pay-per-view. I think less potential to be sleepy than the one we just passed, where like the feature prelims on the last card were Bilal Muhammad fights and Volkan Oezdemir fights, where it's like, okay, the sleepiness is kind of nascent here. But Brad Riddell, Renato Moicano, I don't think can be boring in any world unless there's a freak injury involved. Dominic Reyes, I don't think can be boring. So I'm very excited for top to bottom, that whole card. Yeah,
I think it's gonna be absolutely. Andre Petrosky can't be boring either. Andre's insane.
Big fan. Yeah, he's super cool.
Insane.
Yep.
And then you have the Aaron Blanchfield, Molly McCann. They're two that want to just go out there and so is Matt Frivola and Otman Azaitar. I mean,
Otman Azaitar is fighting for his life in the UFC.
Yeah, right.
If he doesn't perform here, they're not gonna want to bring him back.
Yeah, he's gonna be. I don't even know where he's gonna be, in a desert.
Yeah, he's gonna be in the suitcase.
Yeah, in a suitcase.
In the suitcase. They're just gonna put him back in the one that he threw off the balcony. Dubai police have retrieved it.
So funny.
Yeah,
that shit was so funny, bro. Wait, let me see if I can pull up Otman. I want to know a Zaitar suitcase.
So while you're doing that, I'm just gonna say for the record that we know that there's a UFC event coming up, and we're deliberately not talking about it because it is Amanda Lemos Marina Rodriguez main event, and nothing else good is on that card, and those two fighters might not even make it to Las Vegas.
No,
so,
because fucking
Jair Bolsonaro lost, and all the liberals are excited and all the conservatives are upset, and it's impossible to get a flight to Las Vegas. So I don't know what's gonna happen there. I'm fascinated to find out if they actually make it to Vegas or if one of them has to drop out. Amanda Lemos is cursed with all these events getting canceled and shit. Marina Rodriguez probably deserved a title shot. She should be fighting Rose, and she's not, and that's upsetting. But Rose is another. We'll unpack Rose when she eventually fights again, because man, I have thoughts. But yeah. We've gone for 2 hours at this point. Do you have wrapping up funny things or minor news or anything that we didn't get to today?
Yes. I would like to leave with one thing.
Let's do that.
And I think this is the perfect send-off. Otman Azaitar.
Oh, hell yeah.
What was in the suitcase? We have an answer.
Oh, good.
We have an answer. From Ali Abdelaziz. Course, who else is gonna
already flawed, biased, don't care, didn't ask, this is a wrong source.
I'm gonna read this word for word.
He's gonna be like, oh, it was a balanced breakfast.
Potatoes. Azaitar's manager Ali Abdelaziz told Kevin Lull of MMA Junkie recently it was potatoes in the bag.
The potatoes,
guys,
it's totally coincidental that the potatoes had a needle of trenbolone sticking out of it.
Sternaball and stuff, bro. Guys, oh man, that was an amazing episode. We covered a lot.
Yeah.
Next, I believe next week we will be covering the
281
UFC
preview.
281 preview.
Miraculously happen on the Lemos Rodriguez card, we'll talk about it. But
yeah, we'll talk about that.
I highly doubt it unless Neil Magny gets another stunning finish of D-Rod. But regardless,
right.
I doubt it. We'll probably
maybe by
that
point
that
we'll
happens.
Have more insight on the Henry Cejudo and John Jones situations going on.
The Volkanovski Islam fight might be booked by
the
then.
The Volkanovski Islam fight might be, and maybe UFC 284 shapes up by then. Who knows?
Yep.
But that's going to be it for episode 2 of the Bullshito Podcast.
Feeling way more of a rapport. I am Sam. Already feeling way more of a rapport, way more chemistry, way more easy going with this. We went for 2 hours and went by like that. So expect more from us, guys.
Yeah.
Awesome stuff. Yeah. Shout out to, I want to get, if you've ever heard the Jack Slack podcast, he closes it all out with like Charles Oliveira's magnificent bleach blonde hair, bless. And I just need a better sign off than the one I currently have. Cause that's just legendary shit. Or Gleason Tebow's Boulder-esque delts, bless. I need some shit like that.
Ali up with a Zaitar, potatoes in the suitcase.
Bless.
All right. That's been episode 2. See you guys next time. Thank you for tuning in, if you even did, all 5 of you. Peace out.
Take care.